You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today, happy Thursday. It's a new month. It's September. Training camp opens this month. Preseason opens barely over a month from now. It's a good time to be a basketball fan. And we're going to talk about the roster. Everybody's favorite thing in the offseason, roster changes today. There's some key dates coming up for the Pacers about how they can change their roster a little bit. Some key dates with Kendall Brown coming up. So talking about what the Pacers can do with some of their back-end guys. Talk about the salary floor today because I came up with a good analogy to describe why the Pacers will likely be determined to hit it at some point this season. And the Lakers have made some changes. The NBA offseason has some updates. Got to talk about that Russell Westbrook stuff that everybody's dying to know more about. But let's lead off with some upcoming dates and stuff that I think is interesting and matters for the sake of the Pacers offseason and their upcoming steps. First and foremost being, there are five unsigned players still floating out there in the Pacers orbit, a word I've been using a lot this summer. And that's Kendall Brown, Eli Brooks, Jermaine Samuels, Van Bojang, and Tevin Brown. They're Exhibit 10 guys as well as their second round pick, Kendall Brown. So, look, holding off from signing them at least indicates some form of the Pacers considering doing something, whether that's a big trade with a different team, whether that's hopping in on a three-team trade with a couple different teams, whether that's, you know, negotiating with one of those players or a player on the Pacers' own roster, just setting up their own situation perfectly to know, okay, now it's time to do this. That indicates to me that they're considering something or negotiating with someone in that group, and the only one really being Kendall Brown. But at least that means that something has to be happening because, not has to, but likely is happening because Exhibit 10 players, two-way players, and minimum contract players can sign their contract anytime. They could have signed it on July 1st, even during the moratorium, and they haven't yet. And so that indicates to me that they're considering something that would change the way or change the required order of operations to bring these guys in. If they fill up their roster to 20 and sign all these guys, and then they get a great opportunity in a three-team deal with another team, they've got to waive one. And then the calculus kind of changes, stuff moves around. You have to think differently about your team structure, whereas if you do it in the opposite order, it's still easy to bring those guys in. So at least the Pacers probably are thinking in some way about that. They haven't signed anyone to a two-way deal yet. Davita Servetus got brought in on that likely Exhibit 10. I don't have anyone who's officially confirmed that to me, although it has been reported. So there's still a lot of considerations for them. Maybe they bring in a two-way guy and move something around with their Exhibit 10s, but they have a lot available to them. Servetus' deal could even be converted to a two-way. So the back end of the roster is still in an interesting state of flux to me that I think we'll see some clarity on it coming sort of soon. Maybe not all the clarity, but at least something I can dig into and talk about a little bit. And that's with Kendall Brown and a date coming up on September 6th, the required tender date. That means nothing to you because you've never heard that word before, because usually it doesn't matter. The required tender is something every NBA team has to give to draft picks. And for first round picks, it's a little earlier date. And for second round picks, it's a much later date. But a required tender is a 1-year NBA contract required to give for second round picks by September 6th. And on that date, if it hasn't been given to them, a team loses that player's draft rights, right? So by September 6th, the Pacers will have to have at least offered or tendered Kendall Brown a required tender to keep him in their orbit and to keep his draft rights. He could just accept it. For example, Charles Bassey with the 76ers ended up threatening to do the tender route a few years ago. Now, Kendall Brown, I'm sure, has had communication with the Pacers. I don't think they're screwing him or making him wait, but that date is coming up, and he could get it offered, and then the Pacers could keep his draft rights, and then he could not accept it. He could wait, and they could still negotiate and figure something out. That date does not mean that Kendall Brown will be signing with the Pacers by September 6th, but that date does mean there is a date coming up that could indicate some information about how confident the teams are in their negotiations or where they're thinking in this. And if he is given a required tender, or if he signs it and then they waive him, because while it does have to be a 1-year NBA contract, a required tender deal can be completely non-guaranteed. It's essentially just a draft rights contract offer. Although if you are okay with having the player on said deal, it's still fine to offer it. Either way, if it's a non-guaranteed deal, then they waive him. They're the only team in the NBA that could then sign him to a two-way deal. Not a lot of teams are just going to be swooping in and adding him at this point in the offseason. Most rosters are full. So it seems like stuff will come to a head with that, at least some level of public negotiation factor. Well, maybe not public, but we'll learn something about that, at least not too far from now, because the required tender deadline is coming up. Christian Coloco just signed his deal with the Raptors about a week ago, a little less than a week ago, now that the Kevin Durant stuff is settled and the Raptors could use their roster spots in the way that they wanted. And now the Pacers still, again, in this flux situation now. But I think Kendall Brown's the last guy who's not coming overseas and isn't E.J. Liddell, who tore his ACL. He's the last second-round pick who's not signed. So that deadline, air quotes, it's not really a deadline because, again, they could offer him the tender and he could not accept it and they could just be sitting in the same position. But that date could mean we see Kendall Brown sign to a deal in the coming days, which is interesting. The rest of the Exhibit 10 guys, they're technically all undrafted free agents. Anything could happen with them timing-wise. It could be the days before camp. It could be right after Kendall Brown. It could be if the Lakers officially say, we're done trying to do this Russell Westbrook thing. It could be after Donovan Mitchell gets traded. All these hurdles that are in the way, you know, could be the reason that those guys are still sitting out there not on a team. But Kendall Brown, at least there is a deadline for it, or not a deadline. I keep saying that word incorrectly. There is at least a date coming up that will change the way it's viewed, the way he's sitting with the Pacers. And, you know, it could just be that if we don't hear anything by the 6th, we being me, you, fans, anybody, it could just be that they offered him the required tender. But they still would like to negotiate with him and say that, yes, maybe we'll give you a fully guaranteed deal if things break this way, or we'll give you a two-year, two-way deal if things break this way, or something like that that Kendall Brown is willing to accept. But they have to at least tender him to keep his draft rights, or else he just becomes a rookie free agent, and he's a free agent again. So I think that we'll maybe hear something in the next 7 days. Zach Pearson of 8.9 Seconds reported, I think like a month ago at this point, Zach was over this, that his sources told him the Pacers would be signing Kendall Brown to a two-way deal. I think that's the most likely, given that he is still out there, and given the Pacers' current roster spot situation, although it's possible with the open last spot, they'd be willing to give him a standard deal or even give him a two-way deal with the right exhibit clauses that they could convert it to a standard deal if he impresses in camp, just a way for them to kind of have more of an open competition in camp. But it could go a number of ways still, given that a lot is still in flux with the NBA offseason. But I think we'll see at least a little bit, or a little bit because of that date in the coming week. So that's thing number one. Thing number two requires much less explanation. We're 8 days away now, since you're listening to this on September 1st. I might have to change this segment because I'm recording it 2 days in advance. So if Kendall Brown gets signed on Wednesday, this will all sound dumb. But Daniel Theis, the Pacers acquired him in a trade on July 9th. And they were over the cap, so they technically used it doesn't matter. They technically used an exception to acquire him. It's not worth explaining why technically they did. But the same thing with him and Aaron Nesmith. They can be aggregated in trades starting on September 9th. Those two players will be available to be lumped into bigger trades in 8 days. And Theis specifically is a guy that doesn't really fit in the Pacers' plans. May make sense as a trade guy if they can lump him into a huge deal that they're making with another team, or a three-team deal with another team. That would make some sense for the Pacers to do if they could pull it off, but they can't officially do that for 8 days. That said, that date is coming up, and I still wanted to talk about it. That two-month line, again, applies to Aaron Nesmith as well. Doesn't seem like the Pacers would have a need or want to trade him necessarily, unless they don't really believe in him or they can get good value for him. But Theis, at least it makes some sense to trade him. So keep an eye on those two dates. Perhaps you see news with Kendall Brown in the next, you know, 5 days or a week or so, and I will be on vacation this weekend. So perhaps he signed and I'm gone. And then with Theis, perhaps if he was going to be dealt, perhaps it would happen on or around that date, if it's going to happen before training camp. But I have no idea if any team even has interest in him, or if the Pacers even want to deal him, but that is the first date that is officially even possible. So those two dates coming up soon could change the way that the Pacers sort of operate this offseason. And speaking of the way the Pacers operate, something they'll have to deal with is the salary floor. They're still not there. They're still well shy of the floor. I want to talk about how they can get there, why the salary floor matters, and an analogy to kind of explain why teams like to hit it. So let's get to that. Before we do that, though, really quickly, I want to talk to you guys about betonline.net, your number one source for all of your pro and college football betting needs. Football is here. They've got the rest of your sports info on there as well, WNBA lines, and you can find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's opening week's games, 1 week away at betonline.net. Colts in Houston. Colts not a good opening week team, but they're favored by 8 against the lowly Texans. Perhaps they can finally pull it off. And BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. It's the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. You name it, they got it. Head over to that website, betonline.net today, or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, Locked On Knicks is the way to go today. RJ Barrett, 120 million smackaroos. Wow, the third overall pick from a few years ago. Locked On Knicks will have all the details of that deal and what it means for the Knicks' pursuit of Donovan Mitchell. Speaking of trades, we'll get to Russell Westbrook in the third segment today, because there's still nothing really there, but it's still a notable topic to me that I want to discuss. But before we get to Russell Westbrook, I want to talk about the salary floor as it relates to the Pacers, because I've seen some people maybe brush it off a little more than I would expect, and I don't think some people understand exactly why the Pacers, or teams in general, like to hit it. So the salary floor is basically exactly what it sounds like it is. This year, it is a $111 million number that no matter what a team's roster is for the NBA season, they will pay that much for their team, right? So in the most extreme possible example, somehow some team lined it up so that all of their players were free agents at the same time, and then they signed 15 players to minimum contracts, right, before a season started. That team would suck. But when the season ended and that team only had spent, whatever, $25 million in salaries on their team, the NBA would say, okay, you owe the other $90 million or whatever, $86 million now. And that $86 million would be dispersed among the 15 players. So no matter what, or whoever's on the team or whatever. So essentially, that floor will be met by every owner, by every governor, whatever the term is, and that will be paid to players on the roster at some point over the season. Every team for all of time, essentially, has tried to hit it in some way. The Thunder last year were a rare exception, and they had this weird thing going on where they were kind of under the cap and kind of over the cap, so they were kind of doing a dance with some exceptions too, where it was kind of weird in a way that what they were doing that made it kind of hard for them to, not hard, but you know, unique for them to even go over, and they didn't. So they hit the floor exactly last year, and that's pretty rare. So let me explain the salary floor in a way beyond just, because $111 million is just a massive, massive number. Like, it's kind of hard to fathom it and put it in terms of an NBA roster. So you, person, shop for groceries. Everybody does. Pretend you're going to the grocery store to get groceries. You got a list of items you need or you have to get. You get to the store and you learn this is a unique grocery store. Every item they sell has a price, like every store. But regardless of how much stuff you buy when you get in there, either way, regardless of if you hit this total or not, you're spending $110 on groceries, right? So then you go in and you're shopping for your groceries. You get all the things on your list and you get to the counter and your total is $95 and they charge you $110. You'd stop, right? And you'd go back into the store and you'd exchange some of your stuff for pricier items, right? You want to hit that $110 number because you have to spend that much anyway. You might as well spend $110 on stuff. That is the same situation that the Pacers are in. It's $111 million, not $110, but either way, they have to hit that, and they will hit that $111 million number in some way at some point, whether that becomes the last day of the season and it's a windfall to their players or something throughout the season. So I suppose if you get late enough in the season and there's no way for you to hit it, sure, reward your players that you currently have, but if you have ways you can hit it, that also benefits your team and gets you an item from the store, which in this case is a player or an asset or a trade that gets you an asset or something like that, then you should do it. You should be trying to do it anyway because you're spending that much anyway. Why not spend it on something that makes your team better now or gives your team something that will be valuable in the future, right? So that is the lengthy way that I would explain the salary floor. And the Pacers are in that situation where right now I think they're about $17 million short. I think if you can count some cap holds and stuff like that. And they have until, again, the end of the season to hit it. It's salaries paid for the whole season. They do not have to do anything right now. They don't have to hit it at all, and they don't have to hit it right now. But they almost certainly will at some point, whether that's a move that's made this summer. For example, if they trade nothing for Russell, well, they can't trade nothing for Russell Westbrook. If they trade out the minimum salary they possibly could for Russell Westbrook, they would then exceed the salary floor and grant. If they get some assets along the way, that's just one way they can do it. But there's essentially endless ways they could get there. For example, if they renegotiate and extend with Miles Turner, something I talked about in the podcast almost 2 months ago now. He's one of the few extension eligible players on the Pacers, and they up his salary for this coming season, then they would be above or closer to the salary floor, right? That's one way they can add to their salary for this coming season. If they agree to a, not pricey, but, you know, a couple million dollar deal with Kendall Brown or whoever their 15th guy ends up being, that's another way they could add to their money to get to the salary floor, or any signing. Like, Dennis Schroeder is still a free agent. The Pacers have no need for him, none at all. It makes no sense for the Pacers to sign Dennis Schroeder, but if they gave him a $10 million deal, that would get them closer to the salary floor. And then, like I just said with Russell Westbrook, the big one is trades, right? If they do a Westbrook thing where they get whatever, two picks, one pick, one unprotected pick back, and they send out not both Buddy and Turner, but less salary than that, they could have reached the floor. Or if at some point in the middle of the season, you know, some team says, we're not under the luxury tax, we got to get under the luxury tax, they could throw their stuff at the Pacers with assets to get the Pacers to the floor. And so in terms of a renegotiation extension, the Pacers would like to get to the floor and reach that spending number in the store, and they also get the added benefit of having the asset of Miles Turner for longer. If they sign a player to a contract, they get the asset of that player on the agreed-upon contract that they view as an asset, or else they wouldn't be offering the deal. If they do a trade that nets them either a player they really like, it doesn't have to be a salary dump trade. If some random reason a young, talented player became available, the Pacers could just take him on. If they viewed that player as an asset, that's a good way to do that. Reaching the salary floor is a good way and a almost mandatory way for the Pacers to get assets at some point. And if you think back to the store analogy, if you can reach it, they're still in the store shopping for these items and they need 17 more dollars of items. If you can reach it and you're guaranteed to get something you want because you can pick it yourself, that seems like the best possible way to pursue it, is to grab those assets. You know, a signing would be like, If you returned an apple and got like better apples or something. I can't explain. That part of the analogy falls a little short. But in general, it's something the Pacers would like to pursue and hit because they can get assets for something they have to do anyway, which is spend that remaining $17 million on something. That's why I give a little more seriousness to the Russell Westbrook stuff than a lot of people. And I get why it's written off, right? There is not a ton of incentive for the Pacers at this stage, given what has been reported for them sending out, right? That if they get more incentive, maybe they do it. But the salary floor is part of it, where, you know, we'll talk about this in the next segment, but if you take Miles Turner out and it's just Buddy Hield for Russ, you know, if they're getting one first in that exchange and they reach the salary floor, hey, great. You've now used your floor space and gotten a first round pick. Or if it's some, like Portland just waived and stretched Didi Lazada like 2 days ago, 3 days ago, because they wanted to get under the luxury tax. But let's say some other team that's over the tax has a terrible injury really early in the season and they're struggling and they're not going to make the playoffs and they want to sell some expensive player to the Pacers midseason. Boom, the Pacers can do that and pick up an asset that way. It doesn't have to be the Lakers. It doesn't have to be now, but they are most likely going to reach that floor to me, and there's a good chance if it's a trade they pick up an asset and maybe even a quality asset along the way to do it. Perhaps that's too dumbed down of an example. Perhaps that is not a good explanation, but to me it's something the Pacers, and this could be a discussion even in December when trades become possible again, December 15th, and in February when the trade deadline's approaching, for the Pacers is, how are they going to hit the floor? What move will they get involved in that helps them get there? Or what player will they sign that becomes available that helps them get there? Because they almost certainly would like to get there. Every team ever has tried to get there. That's my salary floor rant, and it's kind of a basis for the next thing we're going to talk about, and still a somewhat pressing topic of the Pacers offseason. Greg Doyle in the Indy Star just wrote a story about it. Russell Westbrook to the Pacers, but not Russell Westbrook to the Pacers because of Russell Westbrook, because the Lakers may be offering picks to do it. Let's talk about that trade. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. This one's easy. For your second listen, Locked On Lakers, to hear more about the Westbrook stuff and their changes that team has made, whether that's extensions they have signed to the best player of all time, or trades they have recently made involving Talen Horton Tucker and Patrick Beverley, the Lakers look different, and the Locked On Lakers guys can break that down. Plus, I'm going to be on either today or it might already be up, talking about this Russ stuff for a whole show with the Kamenetsky twins. It's going to be awesome. This is an endlessly fascinating trade possibility to me. So, I did a show on this with Tim Kranjic McBasketball, as many know him in the internet space, about a month ago, talking about the, you know, as Shams Charania and Bob Kravitz of The Athletic reported, there was some talks between the Pacers and Lakers about a Westbrook to Indy trade. And the trade was not had nothing to do with Russell Westbrook. The Pacers likely don't even want Russell Westbrook on their team. What they want is the added benefits that come with the deal. The reported deal was the Lakers 2027 first rounder and Westbrook for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield. The Lakers said, no, we want your 2029 first as well. The talk died, and nothing has come of that since that reporting. The reason it has become a thing again, the reason this has become reignited, is the NBA landscape has changed. The first thing that happened since in the interim is Kevin Durant and the Nets said, eh, never mind, we'll stick together. Well, Kevin Durant decided, I suppose, that he'll stay with the Nets. And so the first thing that means is obviously the Nets are better. But the other thing that means is Kyrie Irving, who is likely already staying with the Nets because his value is pretty low, is more almost certainly going to stay with the Nets, at least on opening night. So the Lakers cannot pursue him at this time. It's less likely they can get him. And there was some talks about what that would look like if that would involve Russ, how that trade would come together. If that is off the table, that is one less thing the Lakers can do involving Westbrook, involving their team. The second thing that happened in the interim, LeBron James signs an extension, a two-year extension. The Lakers now know their future better. They now know their title window is a little longer, so they don't have to, not that they can be riskier, but that they need to make more of an imprint on that title window. Getting good players now who they can lock up for longer makes sense, right? The risk of LeBron leaving is gone. You can now make other risks or make other moves that fit that timeline better, right? So that maybe makes the Lakers a little more willing to move their first round pick, plural potentially, or singular. And the third thing that happened is they acquired another point guard. The Lakers recently traded Talen Horton Tucker and Stanley Johnson to the Utah Jazz for Patrick Beverley. So, their team looks a lot different now, right? They now have Patrick Beverley. Obviously, that's the big one. They have another point guard. They don't have Talen Horton Tucker anymore. LeBron's locked up for longer. You know, their motivations have changed. And so the Russ stuff has kind of been reignited because of that. I think Mark Stein was the first on this, although I've heard this in more than one space, have said that there's a chance that in the Donovan Mitchell trade, where if Mitchell goes to the Knicks, for example, even without RJ Barrett, stuff would go to the Jazz, and then even more stuff would go to the Jazz, along with Russell Westbrook as salary matching in this deal. And then the Lakers would get like a vet from the Knicks, like Evan Fournier or something like that has been talked about. And maybe that's why this has popped up again, because Russell Westbrook fake trades have popped up in a different area. Either way, a lot has happened that means Russ to the Pacers talks should be at least talked about in a different light, because it might be a little more likely, or the pressure might be speeding up. And let's face it, camps in less than a month. There's going to be a date where all of a sudden there's feet to the fire on somebody to make a decision. So let's talk about this trade, right? A lot of the pushback I've gotten when I talk about this trade is fans saying those picks are so far in the future. Who cares? They're still valuable. A first-round pick is a first-round pick no matter when it is. And in fact, I would honestly argue a far-out pick for the Pacers, not only is it just as valuable as a pick now, first-round pick's a first-round pick. Sorry, it's as valuable as any Lakers first. It's not as valuable as any team's, because the Lakers can be good at the drop of a hat. But the thing about a future pick, first of all, a first-round pick is a first-round pick. It has value in trade. Second of all, when the Pacers, it's 2027 or 2029, right? It's 5 years from now, 4 seasons from now. That is like Tyrese Haliburton's prime, Ben Mathurin ascent, whatever their team looks like then. You can never project that far out in the NBA these days. They would want those picks like a lot at that time, either for the opportunity to trade those picks for the help for those two players that I just named, plus whatever else is still with the Pacers and sticking and talented, or to draft some cheap talent onto a team with those two players. Because if they're really clicking in good, like the Pacers presumably want, it's hard to get that cheap talent, and those firsts can be that. So yes, they're far out now. It doesn't help the Pacers rebuild now, but at the time they would come, they wouldn't be rebuilding. So it's not like it hurts their rebuild in any way. The opportunity cost this season is extremely low because they have to use that space below the floor anyway. So getting first-round picks along the way is valuable. Now, if it comes at the expense of a different trade where they could maybe get a 2023 or 2024 first, yes, then I'd understand the opportunity cost. And then I would have some questions about why the Pacers make the decisions they made. But I think the distance off in the future should not deter anyone from saying those picks have more or less value in general. Thing number two that always gets brought up in this trade that I want to discuss here. Russell Westbrook should not suit up for the Pacers. Not 1 second. Even if you won't accept the buyout, send him home, do the John Wall thing, whatever. Obviously, that's up to Herb Simon, the guy paying him the checks, to see if he shows up. But Haliburton might be better than him now. I mean, that might be a stretch. Russ was pretty damn good two seasons ago. But he doesn't have a space on a Pacers team that is more focused on development. I wouldn't think he would play if he was traded to the Pacers. This pick would be about getting picks. And that's where the problem has popped up. The picks have not been enough to me or to the Pacers, who clearly haven't done this. Per the reporting, too, the picks have not been enough. One first for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield and taking back Westbrook's money does not seem like enough to me. And as we talked about with Krangis McBasketball last month, you know, that we both kind of said it makes sense that the Pacers would think, okay, one first is the value for Turner. The other first is the value between Russell Westbrook's terrible contract and Buddy Hield's neutral to bad contract. And I think that is the thinking I would have. Now, I'd understand if someone said Miles Turner is injury prone and you don't want to commit a full out first for him right now. I don't agree with this thinking. I would understand why someone else says it, to be clear. You know, Miles Turner has had this injury history and, you know, Buddy Hield's this terrible defender. Like, they aren't worth two firsts. Okay, yeah, but Russell Westbrook, you have to pay something to get off of his contract. It's one of the most expensive in the league. He's totally not worth it, and he doesn't fit on the Lakers. There's a reason he's been in these trade talks at all. There's a reason their new head coach, Darvin Ham, has dealt with tons and tons and tons of questions about him this summer. To me, if the Pacers can get two, I don't know what to call it, moderately, lightly protected firsts, or one unprotected first and one pretty protected first, I think that makes sense from a value perspective. Getting those far off future picks has a lot of value, and I think that it makes sense for the Pacers to do this deal, largely because of the salary floor element as well. Getting to the floor, they have to use it in some way. But I also understand that Miles Turner could have more value than even two far off crappy firsts, even in this situation. Not Miles Turner by himself, sorry. The trade in general could have more value to the Pacers than two firsts. And I would understand them saying, no, that's not worth it. That's not worth it to us. But what I can think is possible, and this is what I've DM'd a few people, something that I think makes some sense in negotiations is the Lakers saying two firsts is too much. Okay, you know what we'll do is we'll trade Russ and one first for Buddy Hield. Just Buddy, not Miles. And maybe that first would have to come with some protections because, you know, that's a strange trade. Buddy's not worth a first on his own. But if you're Herb Simon, you know, Buddy Hield's got 40-ish million left on his deal, and Russell Westbrook has like 47. You know, you're not taking on that much more total money, and you get a first-round pick, and the money's off the books next year, and it helps you with the salary floor this year. That seems like a good compromise for the Pacers. Now, I get why the Lakers, who are only offering one first for both Buddy and Miles, would not do that. But that seems like a solid compromise to me, given where it sounds like the team's goals are. For the Lakers, it's acquiring help that better fits their team now. For the Pacers, it's potentially, you know, renting out their space and getting an asset along the way, and they could then trade Turner somewhere else. That's the compromise I think makes the most sense, given where this is, where the Lakers have changed, where the Pacers' motivations are, where the roadblocks are in this trade. To me, to clear the hurdle, it would take Turner out and then make it one first that has some level of protections. I think that makes sense to me as the middle ground that would satisfy every team's needs. I get why the Lakers would not think that way, but I think that makes a lot of sense to me. If Turner's in, maybe it's two firsts, maybe somehow like Austin Reeves is in there or something like that. I don't know, but the asset game is really hard to play given how it's been reported, and I think that either taking Turner out or tweaking it a lot would be required in that case. But it's still possible to me, given the salary floor, that the Pacers could use it to then get those assets, given the Lakers' motivations and changes, that this could still happen, especially that it's been floated that potentially Russ could be headed to Utah. It's still something the Lakers are considering. But I also get why they would not do it. This close to the season, new coach, new appreciation for their team to try to figure it out. We'll see. I know that we'll see is the case with everything, but that is my talk on the Russ stuff and the moves the Pacers can still make this summer. Reaching the floor, maybe a Westbrook deal, signing Kendall Brown, trading Daniel Tice, all this stuff still in play. And whatever happens, whenever it happens, you know, right here on Locked On Pacers, we'll have it all broken down for you from every single angle. I've got this cap stuff down as well as I think I can from my seat, although I'm always trying to learn more. So thank you guys a ton for listening today. Tomorrow, Friday, Jack Chris is going to join us. The new Nuvo Pacers beat writer taking over for Seth Johnson, mostly at least, this season. Excited to talk to him as he enters his new role. We're going to talk about when we think the Pacers will next make the playoffs. I think that's a pretty interesting topic considering they're angling for the future to see how they would get there, what it would look like, and all that sort of stuff. So you don't want to miss that. Thank you guys a ton for listening. Have a great rest of your day, and we will see you tomorrow.